It's but you remarked on this in your speech as well. Learning is not a separate thing for you.
No.
What you're trying to achieve is also a view of society, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, my view of society, my view of learning are two parts of the same theory. And it's the theory you saw in the first few slides. It's diversity, it's interconnectedness, and it's open. That's why I like coming to Holland.
Some people have something to say about that too.
Yeah.
It's not as open as it used to be.
Oh, okay.
It's very diversified, but
it feels pretty open.
Well, it's still there, but we're having some problems.
Well, it's hard. It's hard to do those things because because you have a network, and people often try to work the network to serve their own interests, and they try to manipulate the network.
Mm-hmm.
They try to close off branches and limit choices because, you know, they believe that they can achieve some personal gain or something like that.
Instinct.
Well, if you read like the first one of the speakers, I forget what her name is, recommended Shapiro and Varian's information rules, and it's not simply a natural thing, but actually good business practice to be trying to shape the network in this way. And you know, a business will try to close off choices. A business will try to make things hard for you to access, so you have to pay them more. You know, the whole copyright debate, for example, is a question of artificial scarcity, creating an artificial scarcity of a resource so people will pay more. And that's good business practice. It's not good social practice, in my view, but it's good business practice. And so you have this constant tension of people trying to close off the network and people trying to open the network. And it happens not just in economics, it happens across society. People saying, if people want to control what you read so that you form certain ideas that are more to their liking. It's the same principle.
Your two most important interests, as I gather from your website, are learning and ICT. Is that true?
I depict myself as being working at the place where learning, media, philosophy, and information technology come together. So I see myself as a philosopher, as a technologist, as a media specialist, as an educator.
Yeah. And it's the combination of the different fields that makes it interesting for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I have my theory, and it flows out to all of those things, right? It flows out, you know, to learning, to technology, to society as a whole, to media.
You are considered a leading thinker.
Okay.
Why? How did it come about? How did
accident.
This happen?
Totally accident. Seriously. If I had to explain it, I would say something, I guess I do have to explain it, I would say something like, I've spent the last 10 or 15 years applying to myself the principles that I'm now talking about. I have drawn learning in, but not just that. What I've done is I bring this knowledge in and I reshape it, but the most important thing is I then put it out there for free and open access.
And that's why how people come to find you again.
They find me. You know, there are many people who certainly are my equal or better,
mm-hmm.
Very knowledgeable, but they publish only in a closed academic journal.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody sees it.
And you see it as your role also to make knowledge and experience available to others.
Yes.
Is that, how would you describe the job? Do you see it as a job?
Well, I do. Mm. I'm a researcher. I work for the National Research Council. And so, strictly speaking, my job is to do research, right?
Mm-hmm.
To come up with new ideas, new technologies, things like that. And you know, just, I don't know, 1,500 or so researchers in the NRC. But the way I have always done my research is I do my research publicly. And that's more unique to me. That's not really in my job description, but that's how I conduct my research. So that I have results always coming in, right? I try something, I'll put out an idea or a theory, and I get comments back in right away. And that helps me a lot.
It speeds up the process.
Oh, yeah. And it keeps me right at the forefront. Because, you know, now, right, you know, people tell me, you know, they want me to know about their new development or their new software, so they send me emails. Hey, you should look at this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the more I give out, the more I get in. And it becomes now just a matter of, okay, how do I organize this? I've got all of this stuff coming in now. How do I manage my own website, my own information handling?
Especially while traveling so much.
Right. And so a lot of the things that I talk about are, I've developed those over the course of time.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to understand how to deal with this,
mm-hmm.
just for myself. And my website basically is the output of that. But my website, I use software that I wrote myself to create the website. And the whole purpose of the software is to make it easier to do the things that I want to do. My site exists because I'm lazy.
Smart, lazy people are always the best in the company, they say. Do you have any idea how many people read your daily newsletter?
Not really. I know I have a direct daily readership of about 5,000 people, but I also know that like the contents get copied and propagated, because I tell people to do that, right? I want them to do that, and saves me out the effort. So the actual number I can't say.
Yeah.
And it probably varies. For any given article, the readership varies quite a bit. So.
And it's worldwide, isn't it?
Yeah.
People from Africa and Asia and from everywhere.
Yeah. Well, not everywhere. I have nobody from the Christmas Islands.
That's ambitious.
I probably I think they're uninhabited. I mean, from many places around the world, more so in English-speaking countries, obviously, because
mm-hmm.
I write in English.
Yeah. You were talking about the Meta University today, but you said you haven't been thinking about that for a while.
Well, that particular concept, right, mm-hmm. That's just a name,
mm-hmm.
right? The network that I talked about today, I have been thinking about, but described as a meta university,
mm-hmm.
I haven't really been thinking of that particular thought.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to ask what your main interest is at the moment, what you were...
The main interest thinking. Is what you saw there,
mm-hmm.
is that picture of the network.
The 10 boxes.
The 10
so
boxes,
to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just check, because I think I have plenty of information already to write an article, but I've learned a lot from the speech already from what I was going to ask you too. So, for example, how do you see a student or a learner? Is our image of a student, is it outdated because it's passive?
Yeah.
I think you have this idea that the student is not only is a gatherer, is someone who gathers information, produces it,
sure.
shares it with friends,
yeah.
changes it.
and it's not, and they're not doing it just as a student, but that activity more and more becomes part of their actual functioning in society. So like, I have an example that I use sometimes of a budget simulator, right? And you can teach people about how the national budget works by, you have the original budget, the one the government actually drafted, and then you bring that in, and information about that budget, but then you put that into a workspace for a student where they can try to come up with their own budget. And then you add the community by, you know, they come up with their own budget and other people come up with their budgets and they argue about it and they debate it. And, you know, as they get more experience, these budgets get more complex, right? But, you know, and but it's, the thing is, it's something that they, you know, if they're interested in, they just keep doing. They keep doing their budget things. And over time, you have a large number of people spending more time, less time, it's up to them, on their budget simulators, coming up with their own budgets. And as time goes by, you see the aggregate of all of these individual budgets produces, if you will, an average budget, right? What did all the individual people do themselves? And now you have something to compare with the actual national budget. And as time goes by, as people are preparing their budgets, and we have this budget that was produced by the people, it becomes harder and harder for the government to pass a budget that is different from the one that people came up with. So if you look at it, if you look at the end state, you have the budget, all the individual budgets, which actually become the federal budget, and the legislature, when they pass the budget, it almost becomes like, you know, the royal approval or something like that. I don't know if you must have royal approval or something like that here. We do in Canada, right? Parliament passes a law, and then the Governor General or the Queen says, yes, I approve of that. And now, of course, they never say no, right? You know, it would take exceptional circumstances for them to say no to a law. Same thing. You have the budget that's produced by the people working with this system. The actual government, over time, it'd become just politically impossible to say no. They could, they would probably have the right for a long time. But now, let's go back. The student in this environment, when they first start out, they're actually helping form the national budget. Right? Their learning is the same thing, the same activity, exactly the same thing as helping govern the country. And it's just, as they get more experience, their input becomes more detailed, they're influenced by more factors, they're more knowledgeable, and that just, you know, just makes their it makes their individual contribution better. And maybe you scale it so it's less influential when they're 6 years old, because you don't want six-year-olds drafting with you, but maybe not.
It'd be good for animal rights.
Well, it'd be good for a lot of things, right? And but you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Your very beginning learning thing is also part of society. You know, somebody, you know, again, like take a 13-year-old. A 13-year-old might write a story describing a baseball game that he was, don't play baseball here, a soccer game, a football game that he saw, right? The 6-year-old, or the grade 6 or whatever, 13-year-old, may write this article describing the soccer game. This article is actually part of the local news. Now, it might only have 3 readers, it might have 3,000 readers, depends. Right? Depends on, does it get picked up, does it get good ratings, and so on.
Is it funny?
Is it funny? So that person is not simply learning, they are actually participating in society. And it's just, as they get older and more experienced, their participation gets better, it becomes more informed, it's more likely to have an influence. But there's nothing that says, you're 6 years old, sorry, you can't participate. If a 6-year old produces something that's really good, society picks it up, as they should. So that's the picture.
Thanks, Stephen.
No
I'm
problem.
I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Oh, you're quite
sharing
welcome.
Your ideas.